As our cities and summers grow hotter due to climate change, our most vulnerable residents become even more at risk. Dana Habib is a trained architect and urban designer who's delving into the effects of heat and certain illnesses together and how this mixture may become more deadly as the 21st century goes on. Habib says cities are growing hotter on average than the rest of the surrounding land. WFHB's Michael Glab asks, is there anything we can do to slow the increase? Habib and her colleagues at Indiana University's School of Informatics are seeking answers. Habib joins Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here, my guest this week in the studio, Dana Habib. She studies and teaches about and researches cities, the environment. Dana, thanks for being on Big Talk.
Thank you for having me.
You're hoping soon to study the connection between diabetes and heat causing deaths in the city of Indianapolis. And why Indianapolis?
We're interested in focusing on Indianapolis because it has one of the largest food deserts in the U.S.
And this means?
It means that people don't have access to food. And so they call these areas deserts because there is no access to what they call healthy food. Some places actually call them food swamps because they might have access to some foods such as in grocery stores, but they call them more empty calories. But because of this lack of access to food and specifically healthy food, we see a problem with diabetes.
Diabetes, when it's hot, there's a problem.
Right. And so a lot of my work looks at the impact of heat on vulnerable populations. And so what we see is that people with underlying health conditions such as diabetes or cardiovascular diseases are more susceptible and vulnerable to extreme heat and extreme heat mortality.
You talk about something called urban heat islands. So are cities hotspots now?
That's right. And so when talking and thinking about climate change, we have to think about how climate is changing, not just from a global perspective, but from a regional and local perspective as well. And from a local perspective, our climate in cities are actually getting warmer than they are in their rural surrounding areas. And these temperatures are actually increasing at a faster rate than the rural areas and to the planet as a whole as well.
And now why?
It has to do with how we design and build cities.
Mm-hmm.
We're basically displacing the natural vegetation in areas and replacing them with impervious surfaces such as buildings, parking lots, and streets. And that impervious surfaces acts into trapping the incoming solar radiation that we have from the sun and also displaces the natural cooling mechanism that vegetation and trees provides to our urban areas.
Now you, I believe that urban policies and plans can mitigate some of the effects of global warming.
Yes, and so we have a lot of responsibility and power in our cities to make changes that can impact global warming, but also climate change at the local level. So when we think about climate change, we want to distinguish between the effect that we're having on the global planet and how we're impacting climate on our local regions. And a lot of those impacts that we can make to the local environment has to do with what we talk about with regard to land cover change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we are changing the land cover, the natural land cover, by building cities and designing and implementing the built environment.
Oh, one of the interesting things that I recall from my big city days is at a certain point, there was a city ordinance that said all flat-topped roofs had to be silver-coated as opposed to the old black tar method of roofing. I think it made a difference.
Yes, so there's a lot of research that's looking at changing the reflectivity of surfaces.
Yeah.
And so what that is doing is that instead of absorbing the radiation from the sun, and what it's doing is reflecting that energy, and so not increasing the temperatures in cities. One of the projects I'm working on is a Sustainable Research Network grant that is funded by the NSF, and it's looking at how a person's immediate environment is impacting their wellness and mm-hmm. happiness. But one thing that we're doing is trying to measure the air quality, the heat in these areas, as well as the other urban form characteristics as well. And when we see that temperatures are hot, we see that air pollution is high, this also impacts a person's comfort level in their built environment.
Now, is Bloomington a hotspot?
We can think that the larger your city, the more that you're going to have a more distinct urban heat island. But what we see in the urban climate research and field is that we have microclimates. Mm-hmm. And so places where we are displacing the natural vegetation and putting large impervious surfaces, we're going to see drastic change in temperatures. And so if we are comparing the downtown area, Bloomington, to a more rural area, we're going to see a temperature change.
Uh-huh.
How much of that is to be, you know, investigated.
But would we be talking about maybe a degree or a half a degree, or would we be talking about 10 degrees?
You know, it wouldn't be as high as 10 degrees.
Okay.
But a degree makes a big difference.
Right.
And so, and depending on where we're looking, if we're looking at large parking lots in the middle of the summer, we're going to see some high temperature swings if we're comparing these in completely rural natural environment.
Heat waves are beginning earlier in the summer now.
That is true in specific areas. So I did a research study where I looked at how heat waves are changing across large U.S. cities in the United States. And I measured whether they are changing with regard to their frequency, their intensity, their season, and that season specifically looking at how early they're starting and how late they're lasting. And the season one was very interesting, especially in specific areas of the country. San Francisco, for example, ranked as what we called a vulnerable city to extreme heat. And a lot of people wouldn't think of San Francisco as a vulnerable city.
Yeah.
But it ranked as having increasing trends above the national average in three of the heat wave characteristics we're examining. And heat wave season was one of those characteristics. Heat waves in San Francisco are actually starting a month and a half earlier compared to 1960 to 2000s. That 1960 heat waves were beginning in the middle of July. And by the 2000s, they were beginning at the beginning of June. And we see this shift in heat wave season creates more instances for vulnerability for residents.
One of the papers that you've worked on talks about what the rate of heat-related deaths will be in the United States by mid-century, mid-21st century. Looks like it's going to go way up.
That's correct. In some instances, we can expect that heat-related deaths can double by the end of the century, and that this increase of exposure to extreme heat is making our communities even more vulnerable. It's something that's important that our communities need to start planning for now in order to reduce the vulnerability of future residents.
And there are things that the cities can do. Do you have any suggestions for them?
Well, yeah. So depending on the location where they're located, areas with sufficient rainfall, we've seen that doing vegetative solutions and strategies can be some of the most effective strategies at reducing local temperatures.
Rooftop gardens,
implementing trees, putting urban forests throughout urban environments. And we're seeing that in large U.S. cities. Chicago, for example, has a very aggressive green roof policy. Mm-hmm. Los Angeles has a commitment to plant over 1 million trees in their urban environment in the near future. And this is all with an emphasis and a mission to combat local temperatures.
Dana, thanks for being on Big Talk.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
IU researcher Dana Habib speaking with WFHB's Michael Glab. That interview and all other previous interviews are available after the show on WFHB's website, wfhb.org, and also at electronpencil.com.